Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Now we're looking at the last line of that verse. And according to Jiva Goswami, it's in response to a question and a doubt raised by the Supreme Lord. Nanu visheshato bhavatya katam jananti yadajaya mamakrityam nasti. But how can you Shrutis understand so precisely that I have no business with material nature? Tata Sachidananda Guna Eva Surupa Shaktya Samavarudha Samasta Bhaga Iti. And how do you know that I am the very self of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, and as you say, keeping within myself all my opulences by my internal energy, by my Swarup Shakti? It says Atmana in the verse, so the Supreme Lord is glossing that here as Swarup Shaktya, by my Swarup Shakti. I am maintaining all my personal opulences. So, Tatrahu, this they quachiriti. This they answer in the words beginning quachit, the last line of the verse. Quachit, kadachit, shrishyadi samaye, purusharupena, ajaya, maya yacharata, kridata. Nityam cha sarupa shaktya vishkrita sarupa bhuta bhavena satya gyana nandayika rasenatmana chacharata. This has to be in italics. Tavasma lakshano nigama shabda rupena devata rupena cha anucharid sevate. One second, okay. Right. So this is the gloss on the fourth line. Quachit, that means kadachit. In some situations, sometimes, that means at the times of creating the universe and so on, at those times, you are moving, you are playing. Charata, glossed as playing, kridata. In your form of the Purusha, along with the unborn Maya, the material energy. While also at the same time always moving with yourself. Atmana. That means playing with your internal opulence that is manifested by your personal energies. This opulence is exclusively in the transcendental mood of eternal existence, consciousness, and bliss. And as you act thus, the revealed scriptures like us can follow or serve you in both our forms, as sound and as demigods. So, the Vedas are aware, and they are willing and able to describe how the Lord is creating by his material energy, and also how he's playing with his internal energy. Tasmat vayam tat sarvam janima iti artha. Therefore, they imply, we know all of this. Here, Karmani Shashti. You know what Karmani Shashti is? Here, the genitive case of the word charataha indicates the object of the sentence. Because we describe you, you. But the you is described here as charata in the genitive case. This is the sixth case being used in the sense of the second case, object case. The Vedas describe you, who are consorting with your energies. Commentary. Srila Jiva here presumes a question asked by the Lord in response to the beginning of the Shruti's prayer. Okay, there's an apostrophe missing. I'm sorry, because this is not the actual, the original file. I have to make, I have to write comments. It disrupts the class, but apostrophe. Krishna, not cooperating, not cooperating. Okay. The Lord asks. It's assumed by Jiva Goswami the Lord is asking, how can you know so much about what I am? The Shruti's answer in the last line of their first prayer, that sometimes the Vedas can recognize you as you sport with your material and spiritual potencies. The Lord is only understandable through his potencies. The Upanishads are so familiar with the Lord's personal life because they often engage in describing it. It is their regular business to discuss the Lord's so-called play with material Maya, and also his eternal play with his Swarup Shakti. For the Upanishads, as for anyone, describing to others the glories of the Lord is a most effective way to solidify the understanding one has gleaned from scriptural study, meditation, and service. So by kirtanam, one's ability to remember the Lord is supported. The Vedas are engaging in kirtanam, in describing the absolute truth. So their own realization, understanding of the absolute truth, is strengthened by that. The Upanishads speaking here have used the words charato nucharet, char and char, char and anuchar. The Lord is moving and the Vedas move following him. The verb root char can mean move or graze, and in the context of the Supreme Lord's involvement with Maya, it can be rendered in translation as consorts or sports. With the prefix anu, the meaning of char changes to follow. In reference to the Upanishads' involvement with the Supreme Lord, This can be taken to indicate either recognize or serve. The important service the Upanishads do for the Lord is to reveal Him to the conditioned souls. Any comments? Nothing. Okay. No problem, we'll move on. Yes, brother.
The Upanishad seem to be very confident and they can describe the Lord's nature.
Yes.
Wherein there is a statement by Brahma in the 10th canto, 14th chapter somewhere that somebody may claim that they may know about the Lord, but I say that as far as I am concerned, it's not possible, something like that. To know the glories of the Lord completely or something.
Well, the Vedas are not ordinary people. It's difficult for almost anybody to understand the Supreme Lord through the Vedas because of our material conditioning, because we're distracted by Maya. The Vedas, however, are not distracted by Maya. They're not conditioned souls. Therefore, it's just a fact of life. The Vedas can understand the Absolute Truth, and they can, to the extent that their readers are receptive, they can perfectly well describe the Absolute Truth. For the Vedas to come out and say that is not arrogance, it's simply a statement of fact. So when the Kena Upanishad or other Upanishad says that people who say they can understand don't understand, that's talking about ordinary people who tend to be carried away with their pride in themselves. But the Vedas are transcendental. They're not subject to such false pride. Okay? Yeah.
How we can understand that the Vedas say that they can follow or is gospel by serving both our forms as sound and as demigods?
Yes.
How to understand it? Like, we know that Vedas are the sound, and is this like in some form of personified Vedas mentioned as being demigods or what?
Well, not demigods properly, but sages. But let me see, what is the word used in the Sanskrit? Well, Shabda Rupena Devata Rupena.
Devata Rupena.
Yeah, well, maybe demigods is confusing because what they really are sages. But the sages are the... Let me just make a question about that. Anyway, in Sanskrit, Jiva Goswami chooses to use the word devata. We understand that the Vedas are sound, but they also are... each Veda has a rishi, who is the sage of that Veda. The Vedas in person also are present in Vaikuntha, in personified form. You could call them demigods, the Vedas personified as they appear in Vaikuntha. Those are not just the rishis, but the Vedas themselves. We can call that the demigod form of the Vedas, but that appears only in Vaikuntha. Yes.
I have also one more question about, they say that they kochit, sometimes they, at some point of time, they, you know, or in some circumstances, they can know Krishna. But does it mean that they cannot completely understand His glory or His power and His opulences? But
the Anucharita is understood in two different senses. Understand and also describe. So, I don't know whether this is to be taken as a statement that they can't always understand. I don't know about that. But we do know that the Vedas don't always openly describe the personality of Godhead. They don't do that very much openly. So it's only sometimes, some part of the Vedas, that directly describe the personality of Godhead. That we can say. About whether they understand or don't understand, I can't say.
Does it imply that they cannot like completely understand Krishna? They can only deliver us only some partial knowledge about Krishna because they themselves, they can only sometimes...
I can't say. I cannot say what the Vedas don't know. I don't know. I don't have access to that. I don't see statements about that, that the Vedas are ignorant. Yeah, some places it says that Shukadeva understands the glories of Bhagawan, maybe Vyasadeva does, maybe he doesn't. That's about sages like Vyasadeva. But I don't see statements questioning whether the Vedas understand the absolute truth.
Because in case if they do understand, it should be that in this this word Vachitas use it, that when Lord wants to reveal himself, he reveals himself completely to the Vedas, and therefore they has to have this Shakti to explain him, to give knowledge of Krishna. Otherwise, if they don't have full knowledge of Krishna, they won't be completely useful for delivering his knowledge.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
What is the question by the Lord? What the Lord is thinking behind that? Behind the question, that is it? He's saying that keeping within myself all my opulence. I want to know the meaning of the question and the answer, meaning of the answer by the Srutis. Is the Lord is asking that my opulence is hidden within me? How did you understand? And the answer by Srutis is also I didn't understand fully. Your form of Purusha along with unborn Maya. I didn't understand where it is happening in the spiritual world, or Purusha is the first to Mahavishnu, or the whole question and answer.
Not,
I didn't
this
understand.
This is. I'm trying to think of an answer to your question. But this is happening. This is the Vedas coming to wake up Mahavishnu in the causal ocean before the next term of creation. So it's, you know, that's where it is and who's involved. It's Mahavishnu and the Vedas. Why they're asking this, what's behind it, why he's asking this. Yeah. See, the Vedas are claiming that they understand him. They understand his personality. That he's detached from material nature, and that he has his attachment to his internal nature. So he's asking, how do you know that about me? How do you know me so well? And they're answering, we know you because we can see your energies working. We understand you through your energies. We see the creation, and we understand that's you doing the creating. This is you playing with your material energy. And we have some insight to your spiritual activities. And we know that that is also you. Whatever is going on in the spiritual world that we're able to see is again you playing with your internal energy. So by the play of the energy, which we can see, the Vedas have that ability to perceive what's going on in the material world and the spiritual world. By seeing what's going on, by seeing the working of the energies, they can infer the Lord's involvement in it, and they can come to the conclusion that he's like this and he's like that. That's their answer.
Okay, thank you. So, the sentence of the fourth line of translation, you are moving in your form of the Purusha along with unborn, while also moving with yourself. What is it, moving with yourself?
Well, that's answered, that's explained in the parentheses. The verse says, Atmana. The Lord is moving with two different entities, with Aja and with Atma. Mm-hmm. That's a little cryptic. So it's being deciphered here. Aja means the material energy, and Atma means the internal energy.
Mm-hmm.
Or the opulence is created by the internal energy.
Mm.
That's the system here is that what's in parentheses is the gloss.
Yeah.
You know, the explanation of the words before the parentheses.
Just one more question.
Yeah.
I didn't understand this statement that because the Shrutis are able to see the energies of the Lord, they are inferring the nature of the Lord.
Yes.
But what does that mean? Because the Lord is dealing with energy, that's it. That's the ultimate thing. But what they're inferring, what is new to infer? Like, I didn't understand that.
They're inferring that he's not, he's a person, but he's not an ordinary person. He doesn't become attracted and entangled by Maya the way everybody else does. They can see that by the different ways he deals with Maya and then with his internal energy. He's unattached to Maya, but he's obviously attached to his internal energy.
Okay.
So he's not attached like other people. He's got a different kind of personality.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they discover by seeing how what the energies are doing,
mm-hmm.
and by understanding his involvement with those activities.
Okay. Thank you. Really, but I'm just wondering that in commentary, this explanation is not clearly mentioned, like what I understood from your explanation.
Okay, I'll make a note to say something about that.
I mean, the glories of Kirtan is given, then Charato, but the question and answer, like, both are not, like, kind of...
Okay, I made a note of that. I'll try to add something to the commentary. Okay. Hare Krishna. Well, okay. Sorry, I'll try to fix that up. Anything else? Yes.
Sir, mentioned study. And service, and there is also one more thing that the causeless mercy of the Lord. Emevait prunati tena labhyas, nayam atma pravachana labhyas, all those things is not obtainable by this, and one to whom is revealed, he can know himself.
Yes.
By the Lord, causeless mercy of the Lord, without having to do with study, meditation, anything.
Yes.
An extra element of the causeless mercy of the Lord by which one can know.
Well, that's not the topic here, that's discussed elsewhere.
Okay.
Understanding the Lord is within the realm of devotional service.
Oh, yes.
The Karmis and the Gyanis and the ordinary yogis cannot understand the Lord as a person. Understanding of the Lord as a person, as he is only possible by the blessings of his bhakti energy, by devotional service. Devotional service must descend upon someone by her choice. It's her mercy. And then someone can begin to understand Krishna as a person. Atapi te deva padambuja dvaya prasada deshana grihi te evahi. Only someone who has gotten some small portion of your mercy can actually understand your personal glories as they are. Getting Krishna's mercy really means to get the mercy of his devotees, of his internal energy, because Krishna doesn't choose to interfere. He gives his mercy through his devotees. But that's the only way one can actually begin the process of devotional service properly and actually understand the Supreme as a person. Okay, but that's discussed elsewhere. It's not the topic, not the topic here. Yes, Prabhu.
Maybe Sri went on this topic. I remembered that when I think it was Ramananda Rai, he wanted to, he was speaking with Lord Chaitanya, he told that I cannot explain everything about devotional service, but I can explain only one small portion.
Yes.
A small portion of it. And also, in one of the verses in second hymn that he said that Shishot Unapi, Swamasi Sinasya Param, that Shishunaga, he is explaining, he is glorifying Lord since time immemorial, but,
yes.
But still he cannot reach the end of this verse.
Yes.
So maybe I think that Vedas, they cannot like completely know glory of the Lord, but they can know some simple, like some basic understanding or some principle behind the Lord.
Yes.
By observing his plane with this energy, and then they can deliver this knowledge to the conditioned soul. Is it?
That makes sense. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
My understanding right, this kvachit, is it that they know him always, and they know him when kvachit, sometimes when he is playing, during time, the time of creation, like that. That kvachit refers to when some... Or...
Hare Krishna.
Or they only understand kvachit sometimes. It's...
I don't know if I can take it like that. Like I'll say it again. They follow him in two senses. The question is whether they understand him. The other question is, it doesn't seem like they're always describing him. So they're saying, sometimes we follow him. Maybe that means that sometimes they understand him and sometimes they don't. But I cannot speculate about that. I can't say anything more about that. I don't know whether the Vedas sometimes don't understand the Lord. But sometimes they describe him and sometimes they don't apparently describe him. That we can say. But I can't speculate about how much they know or don't know the Lord. Okay, it's not brought out here and I can't say. Okay, I'm going to move into the next paragraph. Etaruktam bhavati. Atra dui vido bedas. Trigunya vishayo nishtrigunya vishayas cha. By this the following is being said. Okay, now here is the further implication of what was just discussed. Among these shrutis, there are two kinds, different kinds of shrutis. Those that have the three modes of nature as their subject matter, and those whose subject matter transcends the three modes. Tatra trigunya vishayas trivida. Pratama prakaras tavad tadavalamba matatastyena tadlakshaka. Now, there are two kinds of Vedas, or two kinds of Shrutis, those that talk about the three modes of nature, and those that talk about that which transcends the three modes. Among the, more specifically, those which have the three modes as their subject are of three kinds. So now the two kinds, one of the two kinds is being broken down into three more kinds. The first refrain from committing themselves to dependence on him, but indicate him by indirect reference. See now, I think what Jiva Goswami is trying to do is show how all the Vedas, one way or another, are describing the Supreme Person, but directly or indirectly. So now we are talking about the Vedas that are supposed to, they're apparently talking about material nature. But, and those are of three kinds. The first of those three kinds refrains from committing themselves to dependence on him. They don't want to talk about him directly. They don't want to get involved with him Why? Because the people who are reading them don't want to hear about him. So the first of these kind of shrutis refrain from committing themselves to dependence on him, because they say, you know, we encourage you to understand that the only reality is the personality of Godhead, and everything is dependent on him. That they'll lose a lot of their readers. People don't want to hear that. So some of the Vedas have to talk to the people who don't want to hear that. And they indicate him only by direct reference. And these are such shrutis as yata, yatova imani bhutani ityadi. Such shrutis as that from which all these beings come. Okay, yatova imani bhutani jayante. That is the absolute truth from which everything comes. That doesn't say much about him as a person. So the impersonalists can tolerate that kind of statement. It's actually pretty much what it said in the very first, second sutra of the Vedanta. Janmadyasya yataha. Then the second kind of shruti, that is it describing the material nature. Because yato vayimani bhutani is talking about all these created beings in the material existence. But there's something from which they all come. Dvitiya prakaras cha triguna maya tat ishita vyadi varnanadi dwara tan mahimadi darshaka. The second kind reveal his greatness and other qualities by describing such relations of his with the three modes of nature as his domination of them. Shrutis like, by him Indra became the king of his domain. Yata Indra yato vasitasya raja. The third kind, dvitritiya prakaras cha, trigunya nirasanena paramavast udeshaka. So the third kind of shruti, the third kind of shruti that's talking about the three modes of nature, indicates the supreme object by rejecting everything derived from the three modes. So it's talking about the three modes, but then it says three modes aren't the reality. The reality is something else. This third kind, sopya yam dvivida, nisheda dwara samanadikaranya dwara cha. This third kind is also of two varieties. That which does this by negating, and that which does it by expressing equivalence. Okay, the first of these two methods, tatrapurva dwara astula manu or neti neti ityadihi. The first of these two methods, it started talking about the three modes of nature, then turns attention from the three modes of nature to a higher reality. One way to do this is by negating, and another way is doing is by a statement of equivalence. So here are examples of negating. Neither very large or not very small. Astulam anu and neti neti. Neither very large, not very small, not this, not that, not this, not that. That's one statement. From what? The Brihadaranyaka Upanishad? And then the other statement, it's not this, it's not that. Neti, neti. So that's talking about material nature and then saying, but Brahma, the absolute truth is not that material nature. It's not this, it's not that. He's not big, he's not small, he's not female, he's not male, he's not this, he's not that. That's negation. Uttara dvara sarvam kalvidam brahma tat tvam asi ityadihi. The second method is found in shrutis like everything in this world is Brahman and you are that. So instead of saying everything in this world is not Brahman, they say everything is Brahman. They're inclusive statements or equivalent statements. Or telling Shweta Ketu, you are that absolute truth. Purvavakye tajata twad iti heto sarvasya eva brahmatvam nirudishya tatra vikrita sadidam iti pratiti paramashrayo yomsha saeva shudham brahmeti uddishyate. In the first of these two statements, everything in this world is Brahman. It is said that everything has the nature of Brahman because it is all generated from Brahman. In this way, the pure absolute Brahman is indicated as that partial expansion of his which, without undergoing any change, is the ultimate basis of the perception this is reality. That means Brahman is this partial expansion of the Supreme Lord. And Brahman doesn't change. Without changing, everything expands from it. Everything is created from Brahman. And therefore you can say everything that exists is Brahman. In the second statement, neti neti, oh no, I'm sorry, the second statement, tattvamasi, you are that. The entity you is shown to be one with the entity it, as an energy of his, with a pure spiritual form like his. Not the Mayavadi interpretation. But you are that means you are also pure spirit, and you are his energy. Tena. Uttaravakye tvam padartasya tadvachirakara tachakti rupatvena tatpadartaikyam yadupapadyate tenapi tatpadartopi brahmaivodishyate. Tatpadarta jnanam vina tvam padartha jnanamatram akinchitkaram iti hi tatpadopanyasaha. The word tat is included in this statement. It's not just tvamasi, but tat tvamasi. To make the point that without knowledge of the entity it, mere knowledge of the entity you is not of much value. The first stage of Brahman realization is just to realize yourself as pure spirit. But then you have to go beyond that. Full Brahman realization is Paramatma realization. Is to understand the absolute truth and your equivalence with the absolute truth. That's actual Brahman, full Brahman realization. Just understanding Tvam without understanding the Tat is incomplete. Okay, let me read the commentary. The Shrutis reveal the supreme truth in a number of ways. With reference sometimes to his material energies and sometimes to his Swarup Shakti. Conditioned souls entrapped in material life best understand the Supreme first in terms of the reality they know. Yato va imani bhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yat prayantyabhi samvishanti tad brahma tad vijigyasasva. From which all these created beings are born, by whom having been born they live, to whom they go to re-enter, that is Brahman, and about that you should inquire. Statements like this at the point at the Supreme from some distance, standing on the shore, tatasta. They do not name or describe him directly, but use figurative reference, lakshanavruti, to gradually direct toward him the attention of the students of the Shrutis. Now that was all the way back, the first kind of Shruti we were talking about. Where is that? Those who refrain from committing themselves, Yeah, there were three kinds. There are shrutis that describe the material modes, and they break into three kinds. They manage to describe the Supreme Truth maybe in a very indirect way. Or maybe they actually describe his dominance over the material modes of nature and his relationship with them. And the others manage to negate, to transcend the material nature and point to a higher reality. So we're talking about the first kind now, that only indirectly, they're talking about material nature and there's something implied about the absolute truth there. Well, actually, absolute truth is mentioned, that from which all of this is created. But nothing is said about that absolute truth, except that it's the source of creation, maintenance, and destruction. They're pointing at the Supreme, but from some great distance, standing on the shore. Other Shrutis approach closer, glorifying the Supreme for his contributions to the material creation and its maintenance. And yet others break through, because you can talk about the Supreme as just as Brahman, as the source from which everything expands in some impersonal way. But then you can talk about the Paramatma and his personal involvement with the creation as Vishnu, as the three Vishnus, who are the three super souls of creation. Yet other Shrutis approach closer, glorifying the Supreme for his contributions to the material creation and its maintenance. And yet others break through the deluding covering of Maya to begin revealing him directly. They give this some sort of name, a mere upadesha, some term to refer to the Supreme, maybe Brahman, or even just the pronoun tat, that. Udesha. Udesha is like a... It's just a ad hoc term. You know, call it something, give it some name. So they call it Brahman. They call it Tat, that. Not knowing the proper name, they just put a name on it. Without becoming too personal, or not that they don't know the name, but they're not telling the name. Without becoming too personal, the Upanishads often take the stance of describing the Supreme by Saman Adhikaranya. That means the substantial non-difference of him and his creation. Just as the color of a blue lotus exists nowhere but in the very substance of the lotus, so the conditioned souls and material world which they know are in substance nothing but the Supreme Himself. This is stated succinctly in the aphorism Tattvamasi. You, the finite soul, are none different from him, the Supreme Soul. Okay, any questions? Sorry, give me.
Some theories according to which first you have to understand our like microcosmos and then macrocosmos. So first you have to understand our inner cell, our nature, and then we can only understand Supreme Soul. But it looks like the Shilji Yogasami, he says that first we have to understand Brahman and then only we can understand who we are. So
where does it say that? That we have to understand Brahman first?
It's the very last sentence of the translation. that without knowledge.
No, no, no. It doesn't say you have to understand Brahman first. You may realize yourself first, but that realization is not complete until you also realize the Supreme Soul. It's normal to begin spiritual realization by understanding yourself as pure spirit. So understand the jiva soul first, and then you can understand the super soul after that. That's a normal procedure. It's not the only way to do it, but it's a normal way.
Like we have to understand that in our line, in our practice, that we are Krishna servant, and then we surrender to Krishna, we start serving Him, and only
well,
then
by His mercy
we can understand Him.
That is a higher procedure. That is a devotional process. But even without the devotional process, one can just understand His nature as eternal soul. To understand that you're servant of Krishna, that's something higher. That's a more advanced stage. Someone, if he's fortunate, may go directly to that stage, but a lot of people can't. They have to just start to try to understand they're not a temporary thing, they're not this body, they're something eternal. So that, for many, is the first stage of spiritual realization.
So there is no contradiction in this way, it's a normal procedure.
I'm sorry?
There is no contradiction in this.
I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
Thank you.
All that's being said here is that it's not much use just to know you without knowing that. Just realization of the spirit soul without the higher realization, the further realization of the super soul, is not much practical use. Okay, you're pure spirit, so what? What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do with that knowledge?
The normal procedure is tattvamasi. First, they have to understand Brahma, Brahman. Then, after understanding Brahman, come to the next conclusion that you are that Brahman. That is the meaning of tattvamasi or something else? There is a last tat and is
not
there,
really. Shri Ketu's father has been trying to, in various ways, indicate the existence of the Absolute Truth, giving him various examples to point out that there's a higher reality behind the phenomena we see. And then at the end of each of those discussions, those little explanations, he points out, and that Absolute Truth, you are that Absolute Truth. So, he's giving some realization of both entities, the soul and the super soul. He's teaching him about both of them at the same time. Okay. In this case, in the case of Shweta Ketu's father instructing him in this passage, the realization of soul and super soul are being given at the same time. Okay, anything else? We're time to finish, but okay, go ahead.
Within the sixth line from down, from the translation, in the first of these two statements,
The first of these two, I don't see it.
Around
read it, because your lines are broken up different than mine. What's the beginning of the sentence?
In the first of these two statements, this is after you are led.
In the first of these two statements, okay, yes.
After you are led,
yeah.
Quotation.
Okay.
It is said that everything has a nature of Brahman because it is all generated from Brahman. In this way, from this point onwards, I didn't understand. In this way, the pure absolute truth, Brahman, is indicated as the partial expansion of His. Who is this? Is this Bhagavan? Or?
Yeah, and that's not clear. It sounds like Brahman is an expansion of Brahman.
Yeah, confusing.
That's not clear. Okay, let me note that right now.
Which without undergoing any change is the basis of the perception.
Spound. Okay.
And still I didn't understand how this statement is proved by the Sarvam Kalvidam Brahman. Everything in this world is Brahman. I think that is a statement you are referring here.
Well, good question. All I'm doing right now is writing down the question. I don't know if I can answer it. Let me see. How do we understand that Brahman is an expansion of Bhagavan from the statement Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma? Well, given the statement Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, and given whatever spiritual knowledge we already have, we have to interpret it. Everything in this world is Brahman. What can that mean? That doesn't mean that there's no hierarchy and everything is the absolute truth. I'm God, you're God. We don't want to take it that way. We recognize a hierarchy that we are not the creator. Something or somebody else is the creator. Something greater than us. So if we say everything is Brahman, safer to interpret it that everything is created by Brahman and maintained by Brahman. Now, what is that Brahman then? Now Brahman is an active creator and maintainer, not just some lump of energy that everything came out of. It's now becoming active. It's an agent, not just, you know, a source, an impersonal source. That assigns some personality to it. If Brahman is actually active, intelligent creator and maintainer, then that's pretty much saying that he's a person. So we may use the word Brahman, but we're starting actually to talk about Bhagavan. So that indicates not just, that indicates Brahman, what we call Brahman is actually a function of Bhagavan. Brahman is that from which everything comes, but that from which everything comes is not just some material source. There's actually a creative person. So the impersonal aspect of the creation is just a facade in front of the person who's actually the creator. The creator is actually a person. He may look impersonal because it seems just to be act like energy's acting, but they're his energies. In that way, Brahman is an expansion of Bhagavan. Brahman is just a function. The impersonal, you know, force of creation that the physicists or other scientists may be investigating is actually just a function of the person who's the real creator. That's sort of what it means. I don't know if it's clear enough in the translation. I have to work on it.
Yeah, it's very, very indirect and deep.
Yeah, so I have to, but I have to do that. I have to go back and study the Sanskrit and make sure I translated it right and maybe fix it up so it makes more sense.
In the commentary, can you explain?
Well, first of all, I'll try to fix the translation. Okay. Anyway, I noted it. I'll have to work on it.
Thank you.
Okay. So we stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Hare Krishna.